This is the son of PCJ.
This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles, directed to New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Well, it's nice to have you with us once again. Coming up on the program today, we have a special. Keith, I believe you're in Singapore, right?
Well, that's right, Paulette. I'm currently standing in Singapore, just waiting for a taxi to take me off to the BBC Far East Relay Station in the northwest of this city-state. We're going to be visiting this facility that was built in the 1960s for the BBC to reach listeners in Australia and New Zealand, as well as listeners in China and other parts of Southeast Asia. So, as I wait in the rain, we now cut back to you in Vancouver for a look at some of the headlines happening in the world of radio.
After almost three decades of broadcasting in the Caribbean, BFBS Radio has turned off its transmitters. The station played host to a multitude of guests to mark the occasion, including members of the British Army Training Support Unit, Belize, who were all treated to a champagne breakfast. BFBS has been in Belize since the early 1980s. Its closure is one of the last acts before British forces pull out completely. The logistics manager and driver for Radio Simba, Farah Hassan Sahal, died from bullet wounds just outside the station's compound in the rest of Bakara market in the capital Mogadishu. Radio Simba director Abdullahi Ali Farah told the Committee to Protect Journalists, the CPJ. Mr. Hassan was helping the station move damaged radio equipment when a sniper shot him three times, Mr. Farah said. Mr. Hassan, 45, is survived by his wife and five children. The shots came from an area of the market controlled by the AU, African Union forces, Farah said. Local journalists suspect that the forces may have mistaken Mr. Hassan for one of the insurgent gunmen in Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab, government, and AU forces had been using buildings near the market to attack each other in a week-long offensive aiming to take control of the area, Somali journalists and wire reports said. Radio Simba has been off the air after shells hit the transmitter antenna of the station. They hope to start rebroadcasting from Bakara Market once the heavy shelling stops, since they lack the funds to move to a safer location, said Mr. Farah. Radio Simba is one of the few media groups still operating in the volatile area, local journalists said. Radio Shabelle, for instance, moved out of the area last year in an attempt to save the station from Al-Shabaab control, Abdimalik Yusuf, chairman of Radio Shabelle, told CPJ. Canadian CP-140 Aurora surveillance planes recently started broadcasting propaganda messages aimed at forces loyal to Libyan strongman Muammar Gaddafi. It's a psychological warfare operation, initially started by the Americans, but now overseen by NATO. The Canadian broadcasts are relatively benign in comparison to some of the harsher messages NATO has aimed at Gaddafi's troops, in which women's voices are telling them to stop killing the children. The Canadian messages in English are read hourly during patrols along the Libyan coast over AM/FM frequencies that Libyans usually monitor. For your safety, return to your family and your home, says the message, which can be heard over unencrypted frequencies the military uses to broadcast basic information. Afghanistan's Minister of Information and Culture, Dr. Sayed Makhdoom Rahin, have inaugurated the Foreign Service of Radio Afghanistan. This service will initially air programs in English and Urdu daily from 15:30 to 16:30 UTC. Dr. Rahin said that the service has been revived through the efforts of the Director General and employees, and in the first place it will air English and Urdu programs, followed by Arabic and Russian programs, and subsequently French and German programs. According to Dr. Rahin, revival of this service will assist in recognition of Afghanistan to its outside friends and will inform them about the country's events. Abdulghani Mudakhakh, head of the Publications Department of Radio Afghanistan, said that the service will cover Asia, Africa, and Europe. The frequency is 6100 kHz. English is from 1530 to 1600 UTC, and Urdu from 1600 to 1630 UTC. Special thanks to Andy Sennett at the Media Network blog at Radio Netherlands Worldwide. You can read more by going to http://blogs.rnw.nl/Media Network. The BBC Far East Relay Station in Singapore performs an invaluable service to reach listeners in Southeast Asia. The station was built in the mid-1960s after the BBC was asked to leave Malaysia. The station operates 24 hours a day. At peak hours, all of the 250 and 50 kilowatt Marconi-made transmitters, with the name the BBC gave them, senders, are working. The large curtain antenna farm was designed to reach listeners in Southeast Asia, China, and the Pacific. And at one time, it was used for the BBC's service to Australia and New Zealand. Today, the station is not operated and maintained by the BBC, but is managed by Babcock Communications. The station is also used by other broadcasters, Deutsche Welle, Radio Netherlands, and Radio Japan, to reach their audiences. After waiting for a taxi in the rain for 15 minutes, Keith took the 35-minute taxi ride to 51 Turret Track in Kranji, located in the northwestern part of Singapore, to meet with Cindy Yao, the manager of the station, and Tan Lam Sun, the senior engineer. Both have been with the station for over 25 years.
Far Eastern Relay Station. We are now broadcasting on 6.195.
We used to have a control desk here that we get a radio feed for the program, and then they did update to satellite feed. So this is where the control bay, there's changes here. But on the transmitter side, there's not much changes.
But here from the from this side, the control room side, back in the early days of the station, how were the programs coming in?
Back in the early day, when I came in, they get a direct satellite feed. Then we got a radio feed as a backup. And now we are using satellite feed. They use digital SMDS. And the backup use an ISDN line. You know? And the control bay equipment, monitor equipment, all have been removed. Mm-hmm. So we replaced with a small table there.
So like with this stuff now, how much easier is it compared to the old days?
It's much, much easier. Rather, you do a last-minute patching here and there, especially on the dock. You do announcement, all these things. No? Mm-hmm. So nowadays, you just leave it to the central in UK to switch in the announcement, everything.
So then over here, you have the computers that control. Now, these control the audio to each of the transmitters, or how does it work?
These three computer PC is basically for the PLC, control, download our program feed, mm-hmm. and schedule to the PLC. And the PLC will do automatic control switching on the transmitter on, off, switch the program in on the source. Mm-hmm. You know. And this is where we do the remote controlling of the transmitter, a selection of radio, the audio feed to the transmitter.
And what about for frequency change? Is that also done in here?
Yes, it's all this done by the PLC. So the engineer has to go to the transmitter, put to the local remote, and then the frequency will do it automatically.
Have there been any slip-ups where you go, oh, wrong frequency? Or
once over blue moon, yeah, there's some command failure. No? So the engine, then the frequency alarm will come on to tell the wrong frequency there. So we have to go there manually, do the selection. Okay. It's not very frequent occurrence. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's actually just go to the transmitter room. Yeah. It's safe to go in. We're not going to get electrocuted or anything.
No, it's quite safe. Can feel quite warm.
Wow, I mean it's such a big difference. So let me ask you, the transmitters that are in this room, what is the minimum and maximum power?
We basically got two models here, the BD6122 transmitting at 100 kilowatt average power, therefore the RF carrier. B1623 is carrying the 250 kilowatts. Or then another model is BD272, the Marconi. It is 250 kilowatt transmission. So basically, there are two models. Here, one's your 100 kilowatt transmitter, the other one is 250 kilowatt transmitter.
How old are these transmitters? How long have they been in use in the station?
Since 1965.
Since 1965?
The transmitters were built in 1965.
So after all this time, if something goes wrong, what do you do for parts? I take it that this company is no longer around.
As I told you earlier, that some of the parts we fabricate ourselves. You know, we have a workshop over right at the end of the hall, and the technicians are able to copy and fabricate themselves. If not, we'll get an outside contractor to help us. Yeah.
So would that be, for example, like the radio tubes or...
The valve we still can get from UK. You know, there's certain capacitor, variable capacitor we still get from UK. And they supply it to us. There's more contacts, we usually make our own. You know, and basically we still can do it ourselves.
Now, you know, looking at this hall, just to describe it, it's a big hall. You have all these transmitters lined up. How often do you perform maintenance here?
We have daily maintenance carry out, you know, to check the transmitter, make sure the simple like, contact is working. And then we have some maintenance schedule to follow.
There are three shifts a day. The day shift, evening shift, night shift. And it's the day shift that do the maintenance work. Any fault reporting from the evening or night shift, the day shift will carry out the fault finding and problem solving.
You've both have been here for a long time. When you think about the millions of people that listen to the programs from this station, you must be very satisfied that they're picking up a really good signal with, you know, very clear audio.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. No? Never expect radio from here can reach other parts of the world, especially to India, China.
I think it's a teamwork. Our engineers work well, you know, to keep this place, the site performing, our performance is good, you know, all the time, stay that at good level.
So with this site, what is the main target area? Where do you mainly target?
I think the Asia, India, Southeast Asia, Indonesia. Yeah. These are quite many programs that go there. Yeah.
So how many staff do you have working in this station?
At the moment, 21.
21?
Yeah.
And at one particular time, how many people would be here?
For the shift work, we have two engineers per shift. Yeah. For the day shift, we have more people. Yeah. So we have two technicians, two admin staff, and the rest are all engineers.
And that's not just for the transmitters, but also for the antennas outside.
Yes, about four riggers.
Yes, I've forgotten about riggers.
To help us maintain the riggers. Right. We maintain the antenna in the field.
I see that you actually have one of them that is open up right now. Is this just going through regular maintenance?
Yeah, we open up to check the contact, make sure everything is in the proper order, ready for the imaging transmission.
How are these cooled?
Basically, this water cool and vapor pool. You know, the water are feeding from the glass tube, as you can see, mm-hmm. And it's boil out, and the steam go up on the glass tube there, and it cool by heat exchangers there. And gravity, and when it condenses the water, you go into a conservator tank there, and it's gravity fit in by the valve.
There must be times of day when every single transmitter is on, or is there? Do they have? They say only use like some at this time, some at this time. There must be times when you have every single one on.
That usually during evening time, at the peak hour, then all the transmitter will be on. Usually after 5 GMT.
You
will look at the schedule chart. Can I show you a schedule chart?
Oh, yeah, sure. We'll see the schedule chart. And we also see some workstations with some spare parts.
For the night shift, I think the transmission ends at 1:30.
No, 2 a.m.
2:30 to 5:30, right? 2:30. During this period, the transmission is off.
This is how it ended.
May the 1st this year, specially modified stealth helicopters set off for Pakistan in the dead of night.
But how did it all begin?
This was a character unlike any we've
seen. You know, people think that international broadcasting, all you're doing is is recording programs, setting the programs out, and that's it. But there's a lot more work to it than that. I mean, this of course is probably the heart or the brain of any broadcast institution. The amount of man hours to go in to use, say, 2-3 frequencies just to reach an audience on the other side of the world, it is quite incredible. I mean, you must have a personal passion for this kind of work, do you?
Of course. I won't be working 24 more years here.
So when you wake up every day, do you wake up and say, do you ever say to yourself, I can't believe I'm doing this?
Yeah, yeah.
Really? So when you're looking to make parts, how do you find somebody that can do it? I mean, because you said that some of the parts you designed yourself, but you must have to meet special, say, technical requirements and safety requirements.
Of course, we try it out first, yeah? Test it out, see whether we can stand it. Can we walk this way? No. And it works, then we fabricate all the parts. Careful.
So with all the RF that's generated here and in the transmitter hall, are you limited, let's say, to the amount of hours that you can spend in one particular area?
No, because I think it's quite in the safe level, you know? So I don't think that's an issue. Especially we're walking around the area field, I don't think you get RF burn unless you stand directly underneath that area that rating 250 kilowatt for
right.
a few hours, you know? And that won't be happen.
Ah, okay.
Most of we are moving about.
So, like, say, have you ever come out here? And do you have a shortwave receiver?
At home, I have. I used to monitor. No?
Yeah.
So not in the office here, because if your transmitter on, you will jam out the shortwave.
Right.
So it's no point. This is an area feed.
So what about these feeds as well? How often do you change these feeder lines?
No, you don't change it unless it's burned.
It's Mrs. Burn.
Careful. Yeah. So far, it's quite lasting. Once in a while, you get horizontal feeder burn, all these things, so we replace it.
And you know, considering that Singapore is in the tropics, what about lightning strikes?
Very lucky we don't get strike.
Okay.
But I think, yeah, it happened once. In the that tower K, you know, but that's the only thing I think I can recall is right there and our transmitter hall, the roof.
Right.
You know. So, but for safety reasons, as they say, it's overcast, then we don't do any work in the field. They say heavy rain coming or lightning coming.
Mm-hmm.
And the golf club providing a service, you know, when riding along approach, when any riding approach, they sound alarm, so we know.
Okay.
Time to go under shelter.
But you know, something that that is quite, you know, you're lucky. I mean, there's other countries, they have certain things to contend with this kind of station, either it being typhoons or cyclones. Singapore is very lucky like that because you don't have, let's say, the same kind of typhoons that would, let's say, affect Indonesia, the Philippines, or Taiwan. You don't have cyclones like you would, let's say, in parts of New Zealand, where Radio New Zealand has been taken off the air because of cyclones. So here you're pretty safe then.
Yeah, I agree with you. You don't face typhoon, earthquake, all these natural disasters.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's not an issue here. No? And you don't face flood here, so it's quite safe.
Right, right.
What a safer place to be.
The rest of the world could be coming down. Just come to the Far East Relay Station and you'll be safe.
Yeah, come to Singapore and stay.
Deutsche Welle News.
This is Mark Hallam in Bonn. U.S. President Barack Obama has announced that politicians in Washington have agreed on a deal to raise the country's debt limit and avoid default. The deal will cut about $1 trillion from government spending over the next 10 years and establishes a...
And I was speaking there with Tam Lam Sun, who's the senior engineer. And we also heard in that piece Cindy Yao, who is the manager of the station, who started off as a secretary many, many years ago. Both of them certainly do have a passion for this kind of work. Anyway, in a few moments, actually, I'll be heading back to the downtown area of Singapore, probably near Orchard Road, to do a little bit of shopping. I wonder if I can get a taxi. That's the only problem here. This area, by the way, is really cut off. Now, when I showed up today, I saw something that was rather unusual. There was no signage outside, but we're going to walk in front of it again. It's completely closed off. It also is a relay station. Well, an abandoned relay station. It was the relay station once used by Radio Singapore International. And I was asking Tan about it, and he told me an interesting story. He said the station was built in the early 1990s with brand new ABS transmitters. When Radio Singapore International closed, they didn't sell off the equipment. No. They didn't do that at all. What did they do? They dumped it. That's right. They dumped it. They threw these beautiful, brand new transmitters, only a few years old, into the scrap heap, as well as the antenna masts and everything else. And all you can see now is the building that was built to house the transmitter hall and the offices and the main gate. Everything else has been abandoned. And he told me, he said, if the BBC was approached to take over the site and use it, he said they would have jumped at it because it was so modern, but they just dumped everything. I don't know why they would do that. Anyway, you are listening, of course, to Media Network Plus. If you'd like to see pictures of my visit to the BBC Far East Relay Station, just go to www.pcjmedia.com and you will find a link. You can also find the pictures at the Facebook page for PCJ Media and PCJ Radio. Just do a search on Facebook and you'll find them, and that's all you need to do. So, as I now walk for another 1.5 kilometers to the main road to try to get a taxi, I think I might have to hitchhike. We're now going to cut back to Paulette all the way in Vancouver.
Aku cari kanan kiri laki gagah yang menari bossanova sungguh gampang hati senang jika sudah.
Next week, Keith will join us again from Singapore to talk about the local radio scene. We now move to the United States. WILD Radio was the scrappy little engine that could. A small budget radio station with big ideas in its 40-plus years on air, it earned a trusted place in Boston's inner-city community. But now, that's gone, and the station serves a very different audience. Here's Dolores Handy from National Public Radio with the details.
In the 1980s, WILD AM 1090, it was the hot spot. If you wanted to find out what was happening in the city, you'd tune in.
BET's Comic View. It's happening September 28th.
If you needed to get information to the African-American inner-city community, even to just a lone teenager out of touch with her family.
Give your mother Charlene a call. She loves you.
Missing you.
Waiting for you to come on in.
The red brick building on Warren Street across from Roxbury District Court is where you'd go, whether you were a concert promoter, community activist, or politician.
And Mayor Menino, I want to thank the mayor for coming by, bought us some flowers, sent us some love.
The coach, Willie May, was sports director and morning co-host at WILD for 22 years. He recalls the good old days.
We made some great strides. I mean, everybody wanted to be a part of it. I mean, here you had this little radio station that was a daytime radio station and really made some great things happen. I remember back in 85, we won Best Morning Show from Boston Magazine, which was huge.
And just about everybody came through.
Luther Vandross, I remember, came on the coldest Veterans Day back in the 80s, and the line went out the door, around the corner, up the hill, because everybody wanted to see the late, great Luther Vandross, and he was great.
But that's all changed now.
Shows don't even come to town hardly anymore because promoters don't feel as though they have a way to get the word out to people to come to their shows. So you don't see as many African-American concerts here in Boston anymore. And it's been like that in a big, big way the last 5 years or so.
He echoes what many in the city are saying, that the voice of the community is gone. What's lost, says Coach, is more than a brick-and-mortar building, more than a radio station with a great playlist. The loss of WILD is especially felt when it comes to news, entertainment, and cultural events, now that WILD has been reprogrammed.
Live from the Chinese capital, each weekday, the latest local and international news.
That's right, China Radio International, as of June 1st, is the new sound of WILD. The station is targeting new Americans. What you hear now when you tune in to AM 1090...
我要学汉语. I want to learn Chinese.
One of the reasons WILD is no longer on the air is that the marketplace has changed. The competition is greater. What's happened to WILD is not surprising to media observers like WBUR media analyst John Carroll.
I think it's a reflection of what's happening in the radio market overall, which is a movement toward consolidation, a movement toward nationalization or internationalization, a movement away from local community presence on radio stations and more toward major conglomerates, which are much less expensive to operate. And one of the issues is, can anyone make the FCC care about this?
The Federal Communications Commission says it's not aware of the change in programming at WILD. Radio One, which holds the WILD license, has a local marketing agreement, or LMA, with Douglas Broadcasting, which is airing China Radio International. Radio One is not required to report that LMA to the FCC. Douglas Broadcasting says the new programming at WILD is an experiment. The company president, Greg Douglas, says he has no plans to sell commercial time. He would not say whether his company is being paid by the Chinese government to broadcast the programming.
And with that, we've come to the end of this week's edition of Media Network Plus. Just a reminder once again, Keith will join us again next week from Singapore to talk about the local radio scene in the city-state next week. If you would like to receive a PCJ QSL card, let us know how you heard this show. Our email is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, that email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Please make sure you mark the time and frequency you heard this show. So for Keith Perron, who's somewhere traveling at the moment, this is Paulette Macquarie in Vancouver, Canada, saying so long and 73s to you all.
My name is Jean-Pierre. I am the Director General of the French Radio Commission. The program that you are just listening to now was a production of PCJ Radio. That's all I've got to do? Where is my money? What, you are, this is for free? You've got to be kidding. I'm never going to do this again. What a load of rubbish, huh?